Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I'm your host, Shannon Holiday, and I'm joined at the studio once again with Letitia Thomas. How are we doing today, Tish?
We're good. We just had a big chit-chat.
We had a huge yarn. So we usually do this before we start and kind of like works us up into getting into podcast mode, but we didn't even have our headphones on or recording anything. We're just gossiping.
Yeah.
It was a great little gossip sesh.
It was a throwback gossip sesh.
It was a lot of throwbacks. It was good. I think we need to get that out there because we've had some sugar this morning. We're ready to go.
Yeah. And if you think we're talking about you.
We are. We are gossip queens. How has your week been since we last met, Letitia?
Full names.
Formalized.
Formal.
Ms.
No, it's been good. Had kind of an easier week. Had some stuff I had to do at the beginning of the week, and then I watched a few movies for our Emma Stone topic. But I accidentally fell down a rabbit hole of Shameless.
Yeah, so you've been watching that. You said that
I've got
to me.
One episode left of season one.
Right.
Because
okay.
I was like, oh, I'll just watch, you know.
It's good. It's very good.
Here and there in between watching films, like, you know, when it's like too late to watch a 2-hour movie before bed. And then yeah, I kind of got into it. So I think I need to slow down.
It's very addictive TV. It's very watchable, like digestible.
I think I'd seen the pilot as a teenager and then
kind of didn't keep going.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, who knows? And then, I was like, oh, I'll just check it out again because I've heard good things. And I am really missing longer seasons.
Yeah.
The first season's only 12, so it's quite short in terms of prime time.
Shameless is about 12 to 13.
But they write it as if it was also serialized. Like a 22 episode where each episode there's a main story and it finishes within that episode. And then, you know, there's obviously an overarching story, but each episode's
beginning, middle, and end. Resolution every single episode. Yeah, that's old school TV.
I miss that. It's
now,
nice sometimes.
Now it's the way it's written, and Ben's watching this TV show on Netflix at the moment while I've just been kind of working away at this kind of stuff. He's watching that Three Body Problem that's got added by the creators from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And I listen in every now and then because the TV is just there. And I know when an episode is about to come up to finish that episode because it always ends on a cliffhanger. There's no resolution for that particular episode's thing. It's always going to be the start of the next episode. So you keep watching.
Yeah, it's the binge model, which I appreciate for certain mini series that are kind of like a bit longer than a film and we'll split them up. I miss the old model. I miss it.
Yeah, that's why I watch, I'm going to bring it up again, things like Lost, things like One Tree Hill. You get a issue that these characters have to deal with and it all mostly gets resolved within that 42-minute kind of period of time. And then obviously you do have overarching plots that keep driving you to keep watching the show. I do miss that. I do miss that kind of thing because I remember when I was younger, Prison Break and Heroes and that, those were the shows you used to watch because it was so captivating. You're like, yes, cool, what's going to happen?
Yeah, and it's stuff that you can watch week to week, which obviously is what the model works for. But then you can also, you don't have to binge it, but you can really get into a show knowing that if I stop now, it's okay.
Yeah.
But I still want to come back and get some more. But I can stop. I can have a life. I can come back and have time to wonder what's coming next. Cause it's not
easy.
This is the immediate next story. I'm watching Shameless and I've got one episode. So with this, it's kind of okay, I have an idea where it's going to go.
Stuff,
but
getting
through it, I'd finish an episode and I was like, I have no idea what's happening next week. I have no idea what's happening next in their lives. Got no idea. And that's it's fun almost to come back cause you're curious rather than know exactly where it's going to go and be like, oh no, I need to go.
I need to watch.
Do something else.
I know what's exactly going to happen. I was going to ask you at the top, have you heard any more information about the competition that you entered?
No, I won't hear about that for months. So,
do you still have to do the written part of the watching the masterclasses?
Yeah, yeah. So I did one and I wrote all my stuff.
Yeah, okay. And then you've got to wait to hear back from
Till I find out the next one. I think it's after we sort of do them all that I find out. Yeah, so it'll be like, I don't know, June.
June, a while.
Yeah, it'll be a while before I find out what happens with that, which is fine, which is kind of good actually. It takes the pressure off.
Yeah, it's good. It's not like crunch. Mm-mm. Yeah, or like stress of like, oh, it's going to be tomorrow.
And look, statistically, with all the people that are in it, odds are not high.
Look, you've got to be
in it.
They're
not high. I'm just saying.
If you're not at all, you're not getting that opportunity. So
if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, I'm not too disheartened because the masterclasses are cool in themselves. So
you're still getting something out of it. Yeah. Even at the end of the day, you've taken something away from it.
Yeah, the next one should be interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
Cool. My week's been an interesting one. So I'm about to tell you a tale, but I'm taking you on a journey.
I'll settle in.
Settle in. So I was sitting down. I was watching a movie at the start of the week. Forget which one. It was one of the myriad of movies that I ended up watching. And, you know, snacks are definitely needed for movies. So I had a box of popcorn, made them in the microwave. They were the butter kind of popcorn. They were delicious. Absolutely smashed the entire box. Loved it. Obviously enjoyed the movie as well. And you know how sometimes with popcorn, you get those little kernel bits right at the end and they're not quite popped and there's a little bit of flaky bits.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of that got stuck in my teeth. One right at the back, the big old chomper. And it was kind of like stuck underneath the gum / where the teeth is. And I couldn't get it out with my tongue. It was annoying me it was up there for an entire day. Frustrating as all hell. Cleaned my teeth, couldn't get it out. Anyway, a day later, that evening, I was so frustrated with it. I got the toothbrush and I basically just jammed it up in there. And I just brushed for no end. Got it out, monstrous bit of kernel. And it just pissed out blood. Like it was like The Shining, basically, the elevator scene. Now, when I went to bed that night, fine. I was like, cool, I fixed the issue. We're all good. No. Woke up the next day and I've never had a worse toothache in my life. Like, honestly, I was like in so much pain. The whole side of my face was like irritated, like nerve damage.
What?
I had a headache, like really bad earache on that side of my head. And I was like, I can't deal with this. Can't deal with this at all. So I've just been smashing Panadol like no end. Like it's like Tic Tacs. And just to hope that the pain goes away. And everyone's like, why don't you just go to the dentist? And I'm like, that's a really good question. Thank you for asking. And I had this discussion with Ben. And I was like, you know, it's been a while since I've been to the dentist. And we kind of went, well, when was that?
Oh, don't ask me that question either.
I was like, I've lived up here since I was about 18. Like I moved up here for uni when everyone else the same age moved up here as well. I took a gap year, but I moved up here anyway. I haven't been to the dentist since before I moved up here. It was definitely while I was still living with my parents. So that would indicate it's at least 16 to 17 years ago since I've been to the dentist. Now, I think given that information, my teeth have held up remarkably well. I think I've got a winning smile and they're actually not too like discolored, but I might need a couple of fillings. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon this year we both go to the dentist.
I think I'm going to go in the next couple of weeks because
I think you need to go now.
The pain is still there. It's not as bad as that first day. It kind of reoccurred, but it's still quite painful.
Follow-up question, yeah. And I'm going to ask you this before the dentist does.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about flossing?
I have floss, and I do it irregularly.
Have you tried flossing the kernel out?
No. Well, the kernel's gone now, but I should have done that at the time.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. I might follow up with that and see if it like makes the pain go away or it makes it worse. We'll find out.
I mean, other way, you should probably just floss.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
I haven't been to the dentist in a while, but I at least floss daily.
I've been brushing a lot lately since it's been hurting a lot.
But more than normal?
It kind of like numbs the pain a bit too when I've like just brushed the absolute hell out of it, that area.
Have you tried warm salty water gargle?
No. Would that help?
Yeah.
What's that for? Like what does that do?
Basically any like cut infection you have most places on the body.
Yeah.
Rinse it out, soak it, some gargle if it's in the mouth. Salty water will get rid of things. All like right. Ulcers, you know when you get an ulcer? And it hurts?
I don't get that many ulcers.
You bit in your cheek and...
Oh, yeah, I do that often.
And, oh, no, now it's like inflamed and gross and hurts.
Yeah,
warm, salty water.
Okay, I'm going to give that a go tonight.
Works wonders.
Or after we get off this podcast, I'm going to rinse it with warm, salty water.
Yeah.
Just go in the ocean.
Yeah, well, we don't have our clothes.
Well, no, not at all. Yeah. I don't have a pool. So that's been my week. I've been dealing with constant pain in my mouth.
Jesus
Christ. I know.
Like you're trying to hold it together, but like.
Well, a lot of it is too, because a lot of my job, like my regular 9-to-5 workday job, I have to, like, a lot of it's talking to people. Like, I'm not just sitting in a computer at home mm-hmm. doing data and stuff. I've got to go venture out and talk to a lot of different people that my job requires.
Flash off your award-winning smile.
Well, I try to do my best. So this week was very difficult to try and kind of like speak coherently when my mouth's just basically not doing what I need it to do because it's so sore. It was a rough week for me.
I think you need to book in the dentist next week.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to.
Yeah, this is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been for a while.
How long do you reckon you, it's not 17 years long?
No, not that long. But yeah, no, last time I remember going, I melted my retainer after I got my braces off.
I was about to ask, you had braces?
I had braces and I melted my retainer like a fool and went back to the dentist and said, hey, I'm here now. Can you fix me up a new retainer, please? Because I've melted it. And he went, oh, no, just see how you go. If your teeth move, come back.
Okay. But that's the point of a retainer, right?
I was in uni.
Poor uni student, don't have money.
Don't have time.
That too.
And so I wasn't really focusing on whether my teeth were moving, you know, millimeter by millimeter until it was too late.
You're not going to know that either.
Until it was too late. So now I've got like they've all moved.
They're very straight though.
They are, but again, they've moved. You clearly had
braces.
You should have seen them before.
Find me a photo. I wanted braces when I was a kid. I was like, I wouldn't mind braces. Everyone had them at that age, you know, like 10 or 11 or something. Everyone's had like when you get your new teeth and they're not quite straight. Everyone was getting braces. And they were like, this is when I actually went to the dentist. They're like, you really don't need them. They're not really that bad.
No, I needed them. That's why I got them. It's a whole other story with it for later. But yeah, like actually needed them. They're like, we're gonna
Well, one of my friends got them done. I remember in high school, he had them for a couple of years. And now you look at him, he's got like the most dead straight as teeth I've ever seen. And I'm like, yeah, they're like, it really works. It's fantastic. Teeth chat 2024. But yeah, no, I know it was a bit of a tangent, but that's been my week.
Right. Well, speaking of anyway, but I do think about that because mine were bad and then they fixed them and now they've moved again. And I'm mad because they fixed it and I had, you know when you get like the really like pointy vampire tooth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to have one and they...
they wear down. They do wear down over time. Mine was very pointy at
the start. When you get braces, they like change it up and they basically just like, see you later, that's going to go.
Oh, they chisel it down?
I don't think they chiseled it, but I think this is the way they do it. It just like ends up sparing.
Yeah.
But then like I think about this quite often now when I watch movies because everyone has veneers now. If you're in Hollywood,
I want veneers.
You get veneers, really?
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah,
okay. I know people are going to probably be like, oh, gross, but I'm like, I've always wanted them, right? They're just so white, but and I like that look.
But then I watch a movie and then I'll watch an old movie,
it's really
and
obviously
I like people with
real teeth
because it's like, oh, they look like them.
Well,
before they got so much work done that they
it's
look
funny that you mention that.
Unlike some people can get veneers and they look just natural, and that's fine, but the people that
it's super obvious.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that because I obviously watched Roadhouse probably a couple of weeks ago now. They've got, the villain is Conor McGregor.
Uh-huh.
And he's supposed to be this like underground crime, not boss, but like he's like the henchman who beats everyone up and stuff. In the story, it doesn't make sense that this man would have gone and performed veneers, but like obviously Conor McGregor in real life has that pearly white teeth, straight teeth. So it really stands out on screen that he's got really fluorescently white teeth. So it's funny that you mentioned that because I've definitely picked up on other actors when they've clearly got it done as well. It does definitely stand out. So I think you're right in terms of acting when you can see not like when real teeth's on screen.
Yeah.
Like you can make them look better
and
still be real.
Yeah.
But it's really noticeable when you get the veneers.
Yeah, I just think, and I mean, this is happening everywhere because everyone's getting work done. It's not just like actors, but
Cyberpunk 2077 is becoming a real thing.
But a lot of people just, I don't know, they don't look so unpolished anymore. And it's kind of a shame because sometimes you want people and characters to look a bit unpolished on screen.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It depends on the role as well.
Definitely.
Like, if you want that grounded indie down-to-earth story, you don't want someone who's going to be like polished facial work, veneers, to be like, oh, he's a down on his lunk, you know,
yeah,
farmer out of Utah. Like, it's not going to make sense.
No, and I just think, yeah, there was a charm in older films because people hadn't had as much work done. So yeah. They just...
Although, when you're looking back at, like, the leading men of, like, the 50s and 60s, like, I swear to God, all of them had the most fakest tan you could ever imagine on screen.
No, like, definitely.
They were the brownest you've ever seen. It really stood out. Like, I was watching, I think it was North by Northwest.
Yeah.
Cary Grant, I'm pretty sure, was in it. And I was like, that man be brown.
Yeah.
It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was like a good middle ground in the 90s, I think, when people were just people.
People were just people.
And like early 2000s. And then when cinema took that next step after like Avatar, it was like super polish everyone off. And now here we are.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird escape of like what you have to look like now as an actor.
And even like what the ideal like male body looked like a long time ago was like not as insane. But then all the superhero movies where they
now it's
put you on steroids and dehydrate you for days.
Yeah, they basically give you a workout regime for 3 months before filming.
And that's the new like
and dietary requirements.
Male heartthrob. Body
100%. It's like the wild. Three Chris's just changed the
literally. Yeah. That's what I mean. It's like insane.
Yeah, and, but mean, that's the same with all characters now. It doesn't even have to be a superhero. No. If like someone takes off their shirt and they're like got, you know, a six pack, you're just like, ooh, because it's gonna be it's a selling point.
Oh yeah, it's the
selling point. But back in the day, it's like as long as I guess they were like not like massive or anything, everyone would be like, that's fine.
Yeah, there's like naturally fit, and then there's like unnaturally fit, which is now the ideal.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't know.
Interesting. But interesting side kind of tangent. Yeah. What were you going to say about the veneers? I think, was it that it, the point that?
I think it's just people look weird now.
Yeah, look weird now. So I want to get them.
Fair enough.
Anything else happen in this week for you, Tish? I will say your hair is getting longer.
I don't know what to do with it. I
picked up on it because I haven't seen you in a week since last recording. Nuts. And it's like nearly probably double.
Yeah, I'm like, what do I do? I was hoping.
It's going to get to the fuzz stage.
Very quickly. Mm-hmm. I'm like, great, do I need to get a haircut soon?
Nah, get past it.
I don't know what to do with it. I was going to bleach it and do fun things.
You could bleach it.
But now I'm like.
You could be Eminem, bleach it blonde. You know, 8 Mile.
Yeah, I have seen it.
Nah, it sucks. You're at the part that sucks probably the most. It's like, the fuzz stage before it gets to like real hair and it starts like falling naturally. Just push through it.
Okay.
Just push through it. Trust
because
me.
I've never been had there. Hair this short and I'm like someone who's had shorter hair, anyone hit me up.
Jackie's youngest, Alia, did the same thing and they went through the fuzz stage.
Yeah, so. I'm like someone tell me what I'm supposed to do right now.
But it's getting longer now. And yeah. If you can get to long hair, you're fine.
Well, I'm trying to like hold out getting a haircut because I know at some point I'm going to have to get them pretty regularly to keep it.
Depends what you want to do now.
Halfway. Well, I don't know. I didn't have a plan.
No, you just went, I'm going to shave my head. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm on board. I'm going to support your charity.
Yeah, the impulse of me was like, yeah, let's do it. And everyone's like, so what are you going to do with it? And I'm like, no, I don't know.
I was surprised you said yes.
I was growing it out. I had.
I know you mentioned that to me previously.
Got quite long, and
it got very long.
It was like mental, like Muppet, like yeah.
I've seen photos of you from high school when you had the longest of hair.
Yeah,
and now we're slow. It was slowly since then just been creeping up the shoulder.
Yeah,
the
shoulder. Yeah. Length. I didn't want to. Was it like no one's gonna cut it? I was that kind of girl. I was like, yeah, I got long hair, and it was like my only whatever.
Yeah.
My best quality, and yeah, slowly just kind of eventually let people cut my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, slowly just got shorter and shorter and shorter. And then I was like, stuff it. And then it got really short for a while there. And then it got curly and short. And
it's
I was like,
very curly actually at one point.
Cool. I'm going to just like grow it out again for a while, see how long I can get it before I just get sick of it and cut it off. And then I agreed to shave my head.
Here we are. I think it's going to be very curly when you let it grow out.
I don't think so.
No?
No, I need to get a certain length before it's curly. Otherwise, it just dumb.
We'll see. I'm on board for it. I'm on board for it.
Right in. Tell me what to do.
Right in. Should we get into the crux of the episode?
I think so, because I didn't watch too much else. I mean, I did watch Driveway Dolls.
Yeah, you were going to mention that because I asked you how it was and you were like, I will speak to you later did about I? It. You gave me like a kind of a small little a kind small of answer. Thing. But I want to go into depth about what you felt about it and maybe why it wasn't exactly the film you
Yeah, enjoyed. I think the trailer was solid.
Mm.
It was like, oh yeah, I'm curious about this. I'll see it. It's sort of like a subpar movie. It's kind of a B grade, which is the style as well.
Yeah, that's exactly the point of the movie.
And I just think it wasn't quite as satisfying as I'd hoped it would be. I think if it was made at a different time, which was what it was intended, like they wanted to make it in the 90s.
Oh, it would have been a perfect
And I think if it was made in the 90s, it would have
even like
made
early 2000s. Sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think, I don't know, it's a different, we're in a different landscape at the moment. We're making a lot of better movies.
I think it's safe to say.
And I think it falls through the cracks. Yeah.
Coen brothers work better together.
Mm-hmm.
I think with just one of them penciling in, it wasn't as strong. Maybe they just, you know, they bounce off ideas better and they go, yeah, that'll work. That doesn't. Because I know he worked with his partner on this one to write it. So maybe it was just a different angle that just didn't land.
Yeah, I think so. And I think because it came out in a time like we had Bottoms, we had Love Lies Bleeding, which is a similar film but very much
very different
stylized and more full on.
Take on it.
Yeah, but a similar type of film. And this sort of sits in between those two, I think, even in story, which is wild because it kind of came out in that same
vein.
Whatever time, whatever, chronological order. It just wasn't as satisfying because there's arguably better films
for
that audience now.
Yeah. Even someone who this is not the target audience for at all, I can agree that Love Lies Bleeding is that real, that gritty take on the story.
Mm-hmm.
The characters feel real. The emotional depths felt. I haven't seen Bottoms yet, but I imagine, like you said, it goes the other way down the track where it's like campy, it's silly.
Campy, silly.
But the point of it is that.
Yeah.
This felt fake to me.
Yeah, it did.
You know, to a point where it's like not believable. I know that was the point of the film.
But it didn't land.
But I didn't enjoy it and it didn't land.
No.
And,
if this, like I said.
Margaret Qualley?
Yeah.
I didn't love her accent.
No.
It kind of irritated me. I didn't mind the Australian actress.
Geraldine.
Yes, that's her.
Someone, I can see her name, but I can't picture it enough to pronounce it.
Yeah.
I
thought she was fine. I thought she was the standout in this and she was actually quite good.
If this film was made like in the 90s, 2000s, cult classic, loved it. Because the thing is, the chances of getting a film, like a lesbian film for that audience, never happened.
No.
So anyone that did
was huge.
Was seen.
Yeah.
Because it was like, this is kind of shit, but also it's all we got, baby.
It's all we
it's
got.
It's great.
Let's
love
celebrate it because it's ours.
Yeah, you watch so many films from the past.
Mm.
Not all of them are great. But you know what? They had a cult audience.
Cult classic status doesn't mean it's a good film.
No.
It just means it's got a massive
and
following.
And I've watched a lot because I just want to see where films have come from and where they go stuff. A lot of them aren't even good.
No.
But it's like we don't have choice, so we'll take it we'll love it because
It's unfortunate
we don't have
it came out at the wrong time.
Now we've got choice.
Yeah.
So which is good because we're starting to get stuff that is quality.
Happiest Season or something, you know, like it's.
Yeah, that was studio watered down, I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen it?
Not yet. It's on my list. I just haven't sat down
with it. Yeah, apparently studios got involved, which of course I did. So it's a little less.
A lot like that at the moment, unfortunately.
Feels a little less. You can see where like it wanted to be and then you can kind of feel where it plays it middle.
Play the line
safe.
Here.
There's a couple of really good moments in it and like Dan Levy's in it and Kristen Stewart's in it and those as a comedic friendship duo.
Fantastic,
is just,
Dan
it's
Levy.
Great. Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't as good as I'd hoped it would be.
Okay. I'll watch it and I'll get back to you on that because, you saw it and I was like,
Wait, Driveway or which one are we talking about?
Happiest Season.
Oh, yeah, no, that's pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, I watch it every so often.
I'll check it out.
Christmas rolls around every other year.
I've seen Driveway Dolls.
I'll watch it. Yeah.
And I felt the exact same way.
Yeah, you watched it before I got to it.
Yeah.
But
Because, I was like, Coen brothers, I love their stuff. this is one of them.
Yeah.
Let me check it out. And it's the new film of the year. Mm-hmm. So watch that. So I, you know.
Weird emphasis on, can we mention on the podcast? How PG are we?
Oh, look, we're not swearing. It's fine. Nah, yeah.
A lot of like dildo emphasis. A lot of, which is weird.
Phallic.
Not weird. Look.
Stuff in this. Well, it makes sense.
It makes sense. Given the, but it also makes you question
the crass why so much level emphasis? They're going for. I don't know.
Because it could have gone any other way and still been like,
I think
know,
the
sexy.
Writers thought it was hilarious.
Yeah,
so they
yeah
just
I think
kept
so.
Putting
it doubled
in
down a lot.
A lot, a lot.
And you were like, I'm just confused.
Yeah.
As like the motive for why this particular point
is
in this
so
whole film. Because you could have gone any which way with it and it still got the same point. But they just, yeah, weird.
There was a couple of good standout moments though. I wouldn't say it's like terrible. Like
no, it's not terrible. It's pretty average, pretty good.
The monologue from... he's in Rustin. I can't forget his
name. Oh, Coleman Domingo.
Yeah, Domingo. Yeah. That was great.
He was Oscar nominated.
I know.
Yeah, he's great.
And then he was in this and I was like, oh, fantastic. Yeah, his monologue when they were captured, yeah. That was really funny. That was really well performed. But a lot of other stuff around it, like, wasn't great. It's got randomly got Matt Damon in it as a cameo. I was like, how did you get him to sign on to this? It made no sense why he popped up when he did.
It's a very strange film.
Yeah.
Not bad, but just I think because we have choice now, doesn't
it
stand out.
It wasn't stand out. Yeah. Apparently, this is a start of a trilogy too. Look into it. They're doing, yeah. Not like a trilogy in terms of like the same characters or anything, but it's like a lesbian B-movie trilogy in like an anthology sense. They're making three of them. So this is the first one.
I mean, look, there's an audience, so.
Look, yeah, you're right.
I'm like, I can't follow
the
them.
Other two might be like a little bit.
They might be better. Maybe. Or there might just be nothing else to watch that year and then we'll all be there.
That's your thing then. What else did I watch this week? I went and saw Monkey Man last night. Now, I won't go into detail because I am doing a video review, which will be up on Instagram and TikTok by the time this episode goes out. So if you haven't seen it yet, go give it a like on both those things. The support is much needed, so I'm not going to go into detail of that movie. Other than that, yeah, it's just been watching a little bit of Emma Stone stuff that I haven't seen this week, and I think we should probably get into her filmography.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just start off her as an actress. What do you think?
I love Emma Stone.
Yeah,
so I really do. She's
got a charm to her.
She's got charisma.
Natural
charisma that doesn't matter what role she's playing. When she's one of those actors that when they pop up on screen, you're like, oh, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's exciting and it's fun because no matter whether she's in it for 2 seconds or 2 hours or if she's got the lead role or a bit part,
yeah.
She has a natural charm that you're like, oh, I want to see you.
She's very versatile too,
yeah,
I think.
Very much so. I think she started out doing a lot of comedy. And I mean, now she's won two Oscars. And yeah, just like, I mean, that's not crazy. That happens a lot, but it's impressive.
I've said this a lot. I think comedy actors can nail drama really
absolutely.
Well, but I don't think a lot of drama actors can nail comedy.
No, it's harder to do.
I think so too, because I think comedy, for you to be really good at it, I think you have to understand the content that you're making fun of first.
You have to understand it, and two, your performance has to be a dramatic performance within the comedy.
Exactly.
You can't
right.
go into it trying to be funny.
It won't land.
It's the same when you write comedy. Yeah. You can't write jokes. You have to write something that ends up being comedic.
100%.
But you can't come at it like, let's just put 10 jokes in here because it doesn't stand on its feet.
No, exactly right. So I think comedy's more layered than people think. Everyone's like, oh, comedy's easy. Just, you know, be silly on screen. No, there's so much more to it than that. So I think, yeah, with someone with a comedy background to begin with, to go into, you know, your dramatic roles later, look at Bryan Cranston, for example, like when he obviously did Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
And then he's done Breaking Bad and a bunch of other stuff since then. It's like, yeah, amazing stuff. When you see things from like even Will Ferrell, who's done Stranger Than Fiction, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Absolutely standout performance in that. And then to, you know, obviously his other films where he's, you know, pretty slapstick. I just think they're more versatile than, you know, your dramatic actor. If you went and put Tom Cruise like in something like Superbad or The 40-Year-Old Virgin, like it just would be weird. You it just see wouldn't it land right.
A lot when you go and watch SNL, depending on who they've got. And a lot of them say
Adam Driver's another example of comedy first.
And this is slightly different, but the people that you see on SNL that do really well, they say all the kid Disney, Nickelodeon, those type of actors, because they know how to do something fast, they know how to do something that doesn't really it's not serious.
Yeah.
But they know how to make a choice, stick to it, and go for it. Mm-hmm. They don't have that shame that a lot of other people have.
They completely remove themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of action and drama actors tend to have that ego where a bit of themselves are the mm-hmm. character as well.
Yeah.
Whereas comedy actors don't. They're completely playing the part 100%.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it's good. It's good to see that. And that's why I think she's gone on to be as huge as she is. Mm-hmm.
She was one of those people that did a little bit in school and then sort of got into films. And just kept going. She got picked up and the momentum
bigger,
just
bigger, bigger.
Yep. Yeah, kept going.
Well, there's a part, and we'll obviously get to that film later, where a bit of the character of her character in La La Land is based on her and her projection through Hollywood, where she's talking about the fact that she used to have these interviews, auditions and stuff, where people would walk in, walk out, not really listen to her, be on the phone and stuff while she was like a young actress. And that was based on her real life experiences. Like they did scene. Yeah, that was actually stuff like she did.
I haven't, and we may as well just talk about La La Land now because it's fine. That's going to be the big one. Yeah. I haven't watched it in a few years and I went back and watched a couple scenes from it last night. And I think I haven't gone to watch it because I'm scared of it.
Why is that, do you think?
Because I think it's a little real.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I remember seeing it in-
Oh, Those Who Dream.
Yeah, I remember seeing it in theaters and I was still in uni and I went with two friends from school and one of them was, she was studying visual art, she's an artist, and the other one was, I don't know if she'd finished yet, but she was nursing. And me and my friend Erin had a few tears that we were holding in
it's towards a the beautiful end. Film.
And we went out of it and we were like, oh my God, that was just, it hurt us. And our other friend-
Was nothing.
I won't mention him because
yeah.
Was like, what? I don't get it. And we're like, yeah, because this isn't a world you're about to go into.
Yeah.
And do. And I think I haven't looked at that film for a while because
it's too confronting.
Yeah. There's a lot of emotion in it. A lot of emotion. Trying to crack into the art and it's a lot struggle of emotion. Through and it.
Yeah. Like what you generally will need to sacrifice to.
That too. Yeah.
To get there.
And I think I'm afraid to watch it because I've been out of uni for a while now.
Yeah, like 4 or 5 years?
I don't know. I don't do the math. Cause
it's getting up there.
It is. That's the point. I'm getting older now. It's getting up there. And I think, I don't know how old her character was in La La Land, but
about 27.
I feel like we're probably getting to
I reckon it's
the age.
About bang on the you should watch it again and see how you feel.
I watched the scene last night and I was like, oh,
I think I'm
afraid of it. Yeah.
I love it though. I thoroughly enjoy this film.
Brilliant.
The soundtrack is infectious.
Da, 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 da. Yep.
That opening scene on the highway bridge.
Beautiful.
Oh, it's so good. So well choreographed.
This film came out and it got a lot of flack because it was people were like, oh, it's copying.
Oh, look,
other
it was
films. I'm like, it's paying homage because it knows it's
cinema.
A film about Hollywood and about
Hollywood.
The pictures and about the blah. I'm like, it's not copying, it was intentionally
I like
copying.
People that didn't like it were like, you know, quote unquote calling it like, oh, it's a Hollywood hand job. I'm like, oh, look, it's that's your take
that's
on
Hollywood
it.
Baby, it's all a hand job.
I don't know, I think that's just a negative take on it. It's, I think
anything
if you have it's people's perception of Hollywood to begin with. And I think that's going to change the outcome view of like a movie like La La Land. So if you have a negative connotation of like Hollywood and like the seedy underbelly that it probably does have, and we're all aware of it.
Go watch Babylon
because you'll appreciate that. It's the same
film. Yeah.
Chazelle film. We talked about that last season. But I think if you have a negative connotation of Hollywood and that to begin with and the people that are all advantageous, but I think flip it and go, well, what can also this industry do to a person? Like, it can really, you know, make you fulfill your dreams that you wanted to be like, you know, a star and really make something of yourself. So this film's for them. It's basically like this is...
It's a love letter. It's a love letter to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I think...
I love it.
What it takes to keep going in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
what drives a person to.
Filled with a lot of broken people that took so much to the few that make it, you know, but what you're willing to give up to get there. And these people in this film know what they're going to have to give up.
Yeah, exactly.
To get there. And it's heartbreaking. And yeah, and her performance is gorgeous in it. Again, like I haven't seen it for a while because.
That final scene where they're looking at each other in the jazz bar, it's just.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking, but like beautiful and at she's the same not time. The go see this film.
Greatest singer.
No.
But she doesn't need to be because that's the point of her character. And I know when she does that, I can't even think. Is it those are the ones that dream?
Yeah.
When she's in the interview.
Yep.
She's doing her audition scene. And
it goes into a dream sequence kind of thing. It's so beautiful. And then comes back in.
Yeah. And just the amount of emotion she puts into this film and as a character that's a bit wants it but is a bit fragile is so incredible. Like she's such a beautiful job of portraying that character in the film. I think her performance, she deserved, I mean, I can't remember who else was in that category.
I can't remember the year
But she deserved the win. It wasn't an unjust win.
I agree with you entirely. I just think, and also I don't know if you remember, because it's been a while since you've seen it, the scene where she, obviously at the start of the film, she's working on a Hollywood set as a barista. These people come in, they're not super nice to her and they're not rude, but like, you know, generally dismissive. Full circle, she's now the one walking in and talking to a barista, but she's like way more complimentary towards the barista. In it's just like the way it comes full circle. It's a beautiful film.
Yeah, she gets to where she dreamed of being, but she hasn't lost herself throughout it.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a beautiful film, and that's the big one. One of the big ones that we're gonna have. I think we should start back at the start. So
I think so, but we got there. So we got there.
Yeah. We'll go through it. She started out back in 2008, and one of the bigger kind of raunchy comedies of the 2000s is Superbad.
I watched that this week. I hadn't seen it before.
I'm surprised you haven't seen it because it's such one of those pillars of teen comedy.
Everyone talked about it a lot, but I'd never seen it when it came out because I was 10. I was 10 the year it came out. So
18.
Yeah.
Hard it was for like me. Made for me.
It was hard for me to get movies.
Yeah. She doesn't have a huge part in this.
No, she doesn't.
She plays Jules, which is the love interest of Jonah Hill's character. Mm-hmm. Jonah Hill's character. This is also one of his standout movies. So he pretty much broke into Hollywood from Superbad. Michael Cera was known for Arrested Development before that. He was in comedy for a while, so he was a pretty big name.
I now understand McLovin because people used to quote McLovin, that all the time. And Irish I was like,
R&B singer?
Don't 100% understand it.
You only have one name. It's so good. Yeah, this actually obviously broke him into Hollywood as well. Seth Rogen, Bill Hader as the cops. Now, this was written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. It's one of those comedy duo writing teams that Seth Rogen was known for. He's done a couple of other ones as well. It's very crass.
Yeah.
It's very teen comedy, but it's done so well. Like you really want to follow these boys on their adventure in this one. It takes place in one night. And they just want to, they do a pact. It's like one of the last times they're going to party and they want to lose their virginity at the same night when they go to the party. So it's basically follows them through this journey of through town and just hilarity ensues. Like these different situations occur. McLovin goes on his own kind of journey
as well.
I know,
he's like, he's the hero of this story.
Yeah,
it's not them. I mean, it is, but.
He obviously follows, like the cops find him because he's, I think he's trying to buy like the alcohol or something. And they
use him as a scapegoat, but they also see themselves want to have, in him.
And they're like the fun cops and they like take him through the night and follow him as well. It's a great, great teen raunchy comedy.
No, but I think she did amazing in this as
Jules,
the girl that they want to get with, but she's like,
she's really down to earth in
she's
this.
She's like, I would hung out with you
if you just were normal.
Drunk.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause Jonah Hill's character obviously thinks the only way that this she'll attractive like him, girl will talk to him is if he's drunk or he's like a certain type of guy. So he tries to act like this thing the whole night. And then when he eventually sees her at the end of the night at the party, he's way too drunk. He's gotten himself far too inebriated And she's just like, you're a mess. You're a cool guy, but you're a mess. Let's talk later kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that scene at the shopping mall right at the end where all four of them kind of meet up.
She's got a black eye.
Yeah, because she gets hit in the in the eye. It's kind of like growing up. It was like kind of like the coming of age moment for those characters.
It was sweet.
It was actually really nice. That's why I can always go and rewatch Superbad.
This is an interesting because it's Jonah Hill in both, but they did a film a couple of years back. Olivia, can't think of a name. She did it at Booksmart.
Oh, I haven't seen that
yet. But this is with Beanie Feldstein. Yeah. And it's basically the same premise.
Is it?
It's two girls this time.
Yeah.
And they're like the nerds of school and they get all their like SAT results and they realize that they've missed all this partying and all of the idiots that they went to school with that got to party and had sex and did all that stuff also got into the same schools as them.
So it's like, what have we done?
And they're like, what the hell? And they've got one night to do the party.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. But it was a good one too.
Yeah, okay. I've heard. I want to see that. Because, it's the sister, Joan Hill's sister.
Yeah, Beanie.
It's good. Next one's Rocker. I have not seen The Rocker.
Me either.
So I don't know if she has a big part or anything. It's 2008, so I would say probably not. It was her second role. It's the big one with Rainn Wilson. Won't go too much into detail because I don't think she had a massive role in it. But the next one, which was also 2008, was The House Bunny.
I've not seen this one. I wanted to watch it, but...
I have.
Time. Didn't have a lot this week.
But I'm going to say I probably saw it about 2010. So you're looking at about 14 years ago when it's a 16-year-old movie. It stars Anna Faris as this ex-Playboy bunny who gets kicked out because she's apparently too old for the Playboy mansion.
Right, okay, yeah.
And the only place she gets to live is in like a college dorm with these three other
sorority.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And Emma Stone plays one of the three kind of like main sorority girls. And they're like a nerd kind of sorority group. Mm-hmm. They're like the misfits basically. Yep. So when Anna Faris is living in there, she's like, you know, she's all dolled up with the blonde hair and the pink outfits and stuff. She basically teaches these three or four girls how to be confident. And it's not about how they look. It's just about how to be confident in themselves. And it's kind of like a buddy kind of story. And they grow to love her like a mother kind of figure. And obviously it's a comedy, so silly things happen during it, but it's quite a good film. And yeah, like Emma Stone basically plays like the lead of the sorority girl. Like she's the main, one of the main ones. It's got Kat Dennings in it too as one of the other ones.
I have to watch it at some point.
It's fun.
I remember it being massive when I was a kid, but again, was just not one that I was watching and I've not come back.
I don't think it's easy to find these days.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on a streaming anywhere. I'd have to look it up. I don't think so.
I don't know. Anyway.
Worth checking out.
She did a couple more that we haven't seen. So there was Ghost of Girlfriends Past. You didn't?
No, I haven't. I haven't watched that yet. But I don't think she had a big role. I think she was one of the girlfriends one scene. Yeah. I think it was a cameo.
You caught Paperman.
I watched Paperman.
A brief.
I'll do a little bit of a chat on it. It was an indie film made by Sundance Film Festival. So it was a grant given by the Sundance Film Festival to this sibling writers, and they wrote it and got it made in 2009. Pretty low budget film, takes place mostly in like a small coastal town in like one or two locations. It's starring Jeff Daniels, Emma Stone, Ryan Reynolds, and Lisa Kudrow.
Honestly, if I was submitting to a comp.
And Kieran Culkin, actually.
Got a bunch of money from Sundance, which is insane because it's Sundance.
Yeah.
And then I got Jeff Daniels, Emma Stone, Ryan Reynolds, Lisa Kudrow, and bloody the Culkin brother. I would have been stoked.
But you got to remember 2009.
Still.
Most of these people weren't big yet.
They've still been in enough, though, that you're like, these are real actors. Oh, yeah, like
Jeff Daniels and Lisa Kudrow are obviously huge. But Emma Stone was only coming off the back of Superbad.
That's true.
Kieran Culkin hadn't done even Scott Pilgrim yet.
Okay, fair.
Ryan Reynolds was just done Blade, I think. He hadn't done much of his bigger stuff. They kind of exploded past this point. It's a weird movie. It's very, very indie in the sense of, you know how
it's
like
Sundance,
indie has that kind of quirk absurdist to it? Not in the sense of it's not in reality, but it's just people don't react to things the normal way people do.
Yeah.
It's about a washed-up writer, and he forms a really unlikely friendship is one would say. It's really borderline questionable with a teen from Long Island who's played by Emma Stone. So Emma Stone and Jeff Daniels are the leads.
Okay.
Imagine Lost in Translation, but quirkier and set on Long Island. It was trying to emulate that, but it didn't quite pull it off. It also deals with mental health issues and trauma as well. So it's got those kind of thematics sprinkled in there because Ryan Reynolds plays a character called Captain Fantastic. He's an imaginary friend of Jeff Daniels. So no one else can see him. He just pops up, talks to him being like, this is a bad situation. You shouldn't do this, with a little bit of Ryan Reynolds isms in there. He's not on screen a great deal. Kieran Culkin is the same thing for Emma Stone.
Oh, interesting.
An imaginary friend. Because she's going through a lot of heavy trauma. You find out like halfway through the film, her twin sister died by going swimming because Emma Stone's character was like, yeah, go in, you'll be fine.
Oh.
And it's a lot of that in there.
Right.
So, and same with Jeff Daniels' characters. Like, he's hit middle age. He's a writer. He's trying to write his second book. He's got writer's block. So he's just literally doing everything else but write.
Yeah, I feel that.
And the idea of the movie is they're supposed to come together and especially have both of them grow up, because Jeff Daniels' character has a huge argument with Lisa Kudrow, his wife, towards the end, where it's like, we never had kids. I want a kid. She'll be the perfect kid. So like, there's a lot of things that they're trying to address between both of them. Just didn't come out perfect. There was a really good film in it, and I was like, if this had more money or someone else script editing or going, hey, let's maybe just try this instead of that.
Yeah.
This could have been a fantastic film, but it doesn't portray the fact that he sees her as like a daughter kind of figure.
Yeah.
It's a bit like wishy-washy.
Didn't quite hit.
And I was like, it's a bit disappointing. I was really disappointed because it could have been good.
Yeah.
Could have been good. And saying that, Emma Stone acted her chops off in this as well. So she did stand out as an actress in it. It just was the substance, the stuff, the script wasn't perfect. Disappointing, but worth a shot.
Happens. And
good luck finding it. So moving on.
Next we've got a pretty big one of the time.
Yes.
Zombieland, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I only saw this recently. Really? Yeah, in a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember what my childhood was like with movies?
I got to remember that age difference.
Could not watch any. Streaming didn't exist. Didn't have money to go to a video store. Barely had a computer to stream on.
True.
It was rough out there.
I watched this as the good old days when, remember how Australia was like the lead in illegal downloads?
Yeah, because
we never had access to anything.
No, we didn't.
So Zombieland was one of the movies. It was around that exact time where everyone was downloading movies like second to none.
Oh, yeah. Everyone had a hard drive.
Yeah, exactly. So this was one of the big movies I'd watch every couple of weekends. I've seen it so many times and I absolutely adore it. Like, it's so much fun. The main four actors are really good. You got Jesse Eisenberg, Emma Stone, Woody Harrelson, and Abigail Breslin. Huge.
Yeah, massive.
All four of them huge.
They were all huge at the time.
Yeah. Even now.
Well, yeah, now.
Still are. All four of them. And it's just a fun take on the zombie genre because around that time it was flooded. It was absolutely flooded the market.
Monster horror was huge back in 2009, sorry.
Walking Dead was at its peak or just emerging around then. Like 28 Days Later was coming out and 28 Days, the first one, whatever that one's called.
Everything was big, you know, like Twilight was out in the same different vein, but like Teen Wolf probably around the same time.
Yeah, it would have been around then. Like,
this was like the genre.
So it was a very flooded genre. And to have something coming out that was really different than everything else in the same genre was refreshing. And it was a really good take because it was a comedy take on zombies.
Mm-hmm.
The gore and action was still there. Like, it was still quite gory. And the zombies were done really well. Some of the best like zombies I've seen in a movie, actually.
I did appreciate this. Yeah. Then there's like a Bill Murray cameo.
Oh, my God. The Bill Murray cameo is second to none. He's so good in this that he dresses up in his own house. He dresses up as a zombie so they don't think he's alive, and they come in and they spend time with him overnight. They all do all Ghostbusters things with him. It's like, oh my God, it's on the ceiling again. And it's just really fun. And then all of a sudden he just gets shot because they think he's an actual zombie. Great cameo. But it's all about, this one's about family.
Yeah, Emma Stone was like the sort of, was she grungy a little?
Yeah, grungy, older sister.
Yeah.
And yeah, because the two girls were sisters and then the other two were just like travel buddies because they were the only two
people around
and they became friends from that. So, and then they all met up. Well, they tried to steal their truck first, the girls. But then.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. And that's how they became a family. So they didn't even know each other's names even. They called each other like Wichita and Ohio and stuff. It's like where they're from. I thought that was really cool. But and in the end, they obviously save each other at the amusement park.
Yeah, so this is sort of another one of her early like comedic type roles.
This is the one that broke her into big Hollywood.
Yeah. The one that I first remember seeing her in is this next one we're going to talk about. Which is Easy A. And man, was everyone talking about this movie when it came out. Like all anyone was talking about was this movie. I must have seen it like 1 or 2 years after its release because I remember not being quite early on the boat, but I still managed to sneak in, which honestly for me at that time was quite impressive.
Yeah.
Don't ask me where I found it.
I mean, it's how pretty, I watched it. I would say it's not like controversial for a young teen to watch this at all. Like, I think it's.
It was fine, but my mum wasn't like weird about films and stuff.
Yeah, it's got one of Amanda Bynes' last film credits.
Yeah, and she's amazing in this.
She's really good.
She's amazing in it.
She plays the.
Bless her.
Full on Christian character.
Warrior. Yeah.
Yeah, which is the complete opposite of what Emma Stone's.
It's so funny.
Character portrays.
Yeah, because if no one's seen it, a quick. Brief.
Synopsis, yeah.
Yeah, Emma Stone plays Olive and she lies to her best friend about losing her virginity to a college boy and a girl overhears, which I think was Amanda Bynes.
It was,
overhears it and then she becomes the, like...
The harlot.
The harlot of the school and they're, like, learning about the Scarlet Letter. So they're like, why don't you just embroider an A on your chest? And so she's like, fine, I'm going to become the thing.
Yeah, that you think already am.
And she sort of goes around and lies about taking... guy's virginity and you know giving them whatever's
isn't there a money system
she
involved?
Gets paid for it but in like gift cards and stuff so she's just like whatever
some,
I'm gonna
like,
benefit
Olive Garden or something
and like it's just such
Stanley Tucci as the dad
it's so funny
best role you're adopted who told you
this movie was I loved it
thoroughly enjoyed it. I've only seen it about once or twice since it came out.
It's been
out.
A while since I've seen it.
I'd love to watch it again. It's really good. It's got Penn Bagley in it.
Yeah, crazy. You.
Gossip Girl and You.
Yeah, but he's like the younger heartthrob.
He's the love interest that she wants, but obviously with her reputation, she's worried that he might not be interested in her. But it comes together quite nicely with the whole John Cusack moment at the end with the boombox.
Yeah, because it's a very smart way they frame this film. Because she's telling you the story through her like web diary. And so, and she gets this card, the iconic scene. She gets a card from her aunt, grandma.
Yeah, I think so, grandma.
And it's a birthday card and she opens it and it sings Pocket Full of Sunshine. And she's like, oh, worst song ever. And she closes it. But like anyone with things, you keep opening the, I mean, everyone's seen it, but my sister hated the song. I think I told you last week.
You did, yeah.
Absolutely. Hated it, and I used to sing it all the time because
want a pocket.
Of course, I did.
Full of sunshine.
And I used to threaten that I would change her alarm tone in the morning to Pocket Full of Sunshine, so she just had to wake up for school to Pocket Full of Sunshine.
It was a great scene.
Oh, there's so many good moments.
Yet again,
in this
film,
and her comedy is amazing.
She's got timing down. That's another thing.
She has timing. In her facial expressions, she's got physical comedy.
Mm-hmm.
She just knows how to deliver so many lines.
That's
I remember
what she was good at with Zombieland and Superbad.
There's one in Easy A, and it's one that my sister and I used to. I don't know why we quoted it, but we used to quote it to each other a bit.
Yeah,
sort of. And it's the one when she goes to the pool and the guy wants her to. So he wants to pay for like I don't know something.
Oh, yeah,
I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
And he's like real cheap about it. And she's like, no, give me something worth it.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, well, it's just because I'm like fat and a loser. And she's like, you know what? If you'd been decent, I would have just done it anyway. And he's like, do you want to now? And she's like, not now, I don't. And then I can't.
yeah, I can't remember the quote.
I mean, I can remember it, but it's a bit sweary. And we used to just quote it all the time because it was just, I don't know, she had that timing.
Yeah.
Where it just worked.
Just quick, snappy.
And then it has that sort of beautiful arc in it too where it starts unraveling for her and
yeah,
she's got to figure it all out.
The crisis part of it. And then she's got to, own up to it all.
But it's just really it's good a movie. Solid film.
Good fun.
I'm trying to track it down.
It's kind of one of those films that just went away, didn't it?
It like, did.
It really hasn't been seen since.
It's like...
Unfortunately, there's a few movies like that.
It was sort of, quote unquote, like a Mean Girls of the year.
Yeah, it was.
But then that people style of forget humor. About it.
Yeah.
And you go, hey, remember that film Easy A? Yeah. And everyone goes, oh my God, I love Easy A.
Yeah. It's the same thing, like, Mean Girls or like that Scott Pilgrim vibe mm-hmm. around that time.
That teen comedy.
Yeah, it type, was just fun. And but they're just not doing much of that anymore. Or they're like series and it's just not as good. But also, you just can't. Good luck finding it. It's just one of those films you just can't find.
I went to a an op shop the other day, or like a secondhand store. They had 15 copies, $3 each,
of Easy A.
None of them, were worth buying.
Were they all?
They're all like scratched and dirty and gross. And terrible. I was like, 15, and not one of them could have been cleaned up.
Yeah.
So I left it.
No, I wouldn't. Have
but I am it. Gonna.
I mean, I
am
have
gonna get one.
The Blu-ray. If you had a Blu-ray player, I'd let you borrow it.
Look, I'm not gonna upgrade right now. This makes no financial sense. I'm
gonna buy your PlayStation 5 just so you can play these movies. Play the movies. Play them. All right, we'll move on to our next film. It is Crazy Stupid Love from 2011.
I watched that this week.
Have you seen it before though?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's really good.
I know.
It's a very good
I was
film.
I thought it was more of a like a rom-com.
It's not in that sense.
It's not, and I was impressed.
It's I love the part at the start where Julianne Moore and Steve Carell are driving, and is it he just rolls out of the car because they realize they want a divorce.
Yeah.
It's so good. Ryan Gosling is fantastic
He's
in this.
So good in this.
Really, really charming. I know we're not talking about him, but I think this is one of the ones that kind of elevated him on his career path.
Yeah.
But also Emma Stone. Like, they play off each other so well, and it's why La La Land worked, because those two have great chemistry.
They had history as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
great
and
chemistry.
Then, I mean, there's a cameo, or it's a bit more than a cameo, with Marissa Tomei, which is just...
I love Marissa
she's
Tomei.
She's great and everything, yeah. But this one had a... really fantastic reveal, which Emma Stone is big in the reveal of this film. She's not really in it much.
Say too much.
But yeah, there's a scene towards the end which has a reveal.
I sweated during that scene. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I was like,
oh no.
I was so, I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it because
it's good.
It's
good.
Seeing it. But yeah, her role within that scene.
Yeah, she's not a central character. It's Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell. It's their relationship. There's other people that offshoot off those couple of characters, and Emma Stone's one of them. That part where she's like, hold me, when she's doing the dance, the holding
dance.
Yeah,
you know that's not her?
Really?
So I watched, she was on Graham Norton a couple of weeks back, which is kind of nice in timing.
That helps, yeah.
And she was talking about that scene. I think it was like an old episode, but she had a phobia that she'd forgotten about, and I can't remember why exactly it was, about being dropped in a lift.
Oh my God.
And so they went to do the scene and
she was panicking.
And they went to do it and she had a full breakdown, was crying in her trailer for like hours, had to like cocoon or something, like watch some, I don't know, something. And they came in after like, hey, like.
Are you still good to go now?
You're good. Like, they ended up getting a double because she
God. I'm going to watch it again. See if it's noticeable.
You can't really notice it.
No, they do it from wide shots. So you
but she
can't
was
tell.
So like it was terrified. A real fear that she didn't know she had until that moment, and
just
she's
being
like
held
crying
in
on him and stuff, and just like wrapped herself around him, like just could not, and then hid in the trailer for like hours.
Wild.
And had to just
that's
be like,
cool little anecdote.
I'm so sorry that.
How would you know that you like scared of just being held in the air until I guess someone tries it on you?
Afraid of being dropped? I wouldn't. I would have to trust the person.
I mean, you have to have a good core yourself.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just flop.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of hold yourself straight. So you can know if you're going to be good at that or not to begin with.
Yeah.
If you can't, you're not going to, it's not going
to there's a lot of confidence
well.
That has to go into that.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, good film.
Good film.
Good comedy, rom-com, drama. I would say it's all three at once because it's definitely drama-filled, this one.
Yep.
Sleeper hit from 2011, I think, Crazy Stupid Love. It was really good. And then kind of, same with Steve Carell. He kind of you came out of the, you know, blocks from this film to do heaps of other like drama films? Because he was like, yeah, okay, he's done like Anchorman. Okay, he's done The Office. All right. What else can he do? Does this film, which is like, you know, a bit of drama, a bit of comedy. I am forgetting Little Miss Sunshine, but
oh, that was a gorgeous film.
Great film. He's obviously in that. But this one was like, you know, hit a wider audience. And that kind of led him to do heaps more drama roles. Like he did Beautiful Boy. He's done, was it Foxcatcher as well? I think. His trajectory after doing this particular film changed from here. So that was crazy. Yeah. Next one.
Yeah. It was one of those ones, again, like I had a different impression of it and then watched this and week then, and was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Oh, it's actually a
fantastic
film. Yeah. The next one is The Help from 2011. I don't think I ever watched this all the way through. Reason being I was in a bludge class in
uni?
Grade 11 and 12. School.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, it was social and community studies and I was just doing it because it wasn't weighted and I was like, I can just finish this, like finish my work and then do my other schoolwork in this class instead of taking a spare and like, you know, it'll be fine. Maybe I'll learn something, whatever. I went to a public school. so the people in this class were wild.
Unruly.
Oh, like there's stories that I won't go into on the podcast. They were the type of kids that couldn't even sit down for a lesson and watch a movie. Like this was our work. Yeah,
attention span was next to none.
We just watched this movie and they were just talking throughout it and just being
it's like in the movie theater and you hear some voices behind you like, God damn it.
I was so – this was like the start of me getting mad in cinemas.
Oh, I've witnessed that.
I was furious because I could – I was like – I was a teenager but I could appreciate that this was a like a one of those like good films.
Yeah.
And I was just watching it in class.
It's a period piece movie.
I was watching it in class, so I didn't have to even do schoolwork.
Oh, fantastic.
And I could watch a movie that was amazing.
Shut up then.
And no one, and I couldn't hear it because they weren't turning it up loud enough.
That would infuriate me
so I haven't really watched this properly and I have been meaning to go back to it like literally ever since I was in school. But this one is set during the civil rights movement in the 60s in America. And Emma Stone's character is an aspiring author who decides to tell a story from the like African-American maid's point of view in these white families because obviously they're treated
poorly.
Yeah, that's
understandable. That's a nice way of saying it, yeah.
But they're basically raising these white women's children.
Yeah, oh yeah, they were, yeah.
Into upstanding human beings kind of thing, but being treated terribly and Emma Stone's character wants to sort of unveil that. Look, maybe it's a little bit white savior complex because it is from the perspective of
Emma Stone.
Emma Stone. But that being said, fantastic film. It's got a star-studded cast, Viola Davis, Olivia Spencer, Bryce Dallas Howard, Jessica Chastain, Allison Janney.
Yeah.
Like it's huge and it's her performance is incredible.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah. It was big. It was big that year it came out. I would have been 21. It just wasn't a film I wasn't going to the cinema for. And I just didn't get it after the fact.
Yeah.
So I just didn't go out of my way to kind of – so I just haven't seen it. Doesn't mean I won't watch it. I'll probably get to it eventually. I just haven't had a chance to see it. But I heard it was quite big and one of those powerful films.
It was one of those ones at the time. But I think her performance does an amazing job of giving the other actresses in this film, like Olivia Spencer and Viola Davis, a platform to play against because she's kind of just there to be like, tell me your story.
Yeah. An interviewee, essentially.
Sort of a bridge between these abhorrent white women at the time.
Viola Davis is just a powerhouse of an actress.
I love her
too.
So much.
She is standout. She is one of my favorite, to be honest.
She is insane. I think she's nearly gotten, has she gotten an EGOT or not quite yet?
I don't know.
Can't remember, but she was close at one point.
If a movie's got Viola Davis in it, I'll be like, well, I know it's going to be quality. It's going to be a very good film.
I started watching How to Get Away with Murder for her.
So did I.
I love that. Because it got
weird.
Okay, so it was like unrealistic to begin with, right? But then they've killed.
But it also
like,
had the guy from Harry Potter, which is I assume you're watching it for. Thomas?
Yeah, by the time they've killed like three people and getting away with it, I'm like,
look, you guys are now becoming mass murderers.
Believe
like,
this now.
Ease up, Turbo. I agree. I watched the first season.
Solid.
And I was like, this is great. This is great TV.
Yeah.
And she's phenomenal in it. She's really good and as the lead teacher. And I
love all of the characters, but then they all got like, they all turned on their each other. Head they all and each other.
Yeah, all
and
the time.
And then I was like, but you had,
Yeah, this person with that person. And I watched the season two, but it wasn't grabbing me like the first season was, so I didn't finish season two. And there's like five seasons and I was like, I'm not committing to
this. I don't know
this.
When I dropped off, but I definitely dropped off. But anyway, that was a tangent.
Tangent about her. All right, we'll get back on track because we actually still have like 10 films to kind of mention. So we'll probably blast through them as quick as
we can. I think so, yeah. Maybe skip a few.
Probably talk about these two in tandem. So you got The Amazing Spider-Man 2012 and The Amazing Spider-Man 2 from 2014.
I only watched the first one.
Lucky, because the second one is average to say.
I heard that, and then by the time the second one was coming out, they were telling us they were rebooting it anyway.
Yeah,
and
like,
I was
why
like,
would I watch
I'm
this?
Not, I'm not. I invested in the first one when I was a little kid. I then invested in this one, and I thought this was going to be cool, and I liked them both as it because I didn't have ownership over anyone.
Yeah.
And then, like, we're doing Tom Holland. I was like, I'm enough.
This I like this series. Like, the first one, The Amazing Spider-Man 1, was good because I think Andrew Garfield is a great Peter Parker.
I think
he's
so
fantastic,
too.
Peter Parker. And she plays Gwen Stacy. So in an alternate comic book universe where it's called the Amazing Spider-Man, he doesn't get with Mary Jane, he gets with Gwen Stacy. And they had great chemistry funnily enough, were dating in real life.
That's true.
I think they met on this film in the first one, then they got together. So the second one, they were obviously already together. Yeah, so she's got blonde hair in this because Gwen Stacy's got blonde hair, and you've been used to her having like this dark,
coppery red
or brown hair for most every other film. You're like, there's Emma Stone right there. She's good. She's a really good like damsel in distress kind of character because she gets caught a lot by the bad guys, and obviously Peter Parker has to save her. These are good. They're obviously not in the MCU or anything, so there's no like bigger like world or scope they have to deal with. So they can just really do their own stories. But the first one was a lot better. In terms of the villain, the story, all like the threat and all that. The second one had Jamie Foxx as like, I think it was like Electro in it. And it was just really, a really bad portrayal of Electro.
I think I didn't bother watching this one either because some kid at school ruined that she died. And I was like, well, now that's the point.
Okay. So I knew that as well because I'm a bit of a comic book nerd. And I knew which movie, like comic book series they were basing it on. And I knew through, well, it was a huge big thing in the comic book world that Gwen Stacy dies, right? Like it's actually the Green Goblin who does this same kind of thing as the movie, like tricks dropping her down a shaft or off a bridge, I think, originally. And Peter Parker has to try and save her. But before she hits the water in the comic book, he webs her.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the quickness of the web, it snaps her neck.
Yeah, that's so grim.
Which is pretty grim, but it happens in the original 60s comic. Like, that's what happens. And there's a whole different trajectory of what Spider-Man comics becomes after that. It's a lot darker because of the outcome of that. And he's kind of like trauma based on that.
Yeah, I mean.
So when I knew they were going to do that in the sequel, I remember I was in the cinemas with my mate and we had discussed this point. And he was like, no, they won't do that. Like, it's a movie.
No, but they have to do it.
He just didn't believe it, right? And I just saw the scene where it was coming up where they were down the shaft, she was falling, and I forget who drops her. I think it is the Green Goblin, but a different version of it, the younger version. And she's falling and he's coming down really slow-mo with the web. And I just turned, because it was maxed out cinema back then when actually cinemas got sold out. He was sitting behind me in the row behind me, but like directly across one, so I could just see him. And I just turned around really slowly and looked at him. And then he just looked back at me and just gave me this, F you kind of like silent like wording. And I was like, yep. Sure enough, bang.
There is nothing more satisfying. And this is sick, right? I did it in one of the Avengers films. There's nothing more satisfying than turning to someone you're sitting with going, they're going to kill them. And they go, no, they're not. And then they die.
And then they do. Yeah, yeah.
That happened to me. I laughed when someone got snapped. Someone got snapped. Packed theater. I pissed myself.
Oh, you mean
myself.
From MCU.
Yeah. I pissed myself.
Yeah.
Oh, did I get dirty looks?
I
think it was when Nick Fury was going to go and I went, Ella, he's going to go to my sister. I was like, he's going to.
Of course they did. That's why that entire scene was there.
And she went, no, it's not going to happen. Yeah. And they.
I love that film for the sheer fact that they lose.
Mm.
I just think it was so well done. And because obviously it was, pinnacle of superhero films at that time. Like, it was the best thing ever made. God damn it. Like, Infinity War. And then when you get to the end of Infinity War and half of them die.
Yeah.
And then you leave the cinema and you go, my heroes are gone.
Yeah.
The ones that I've been following for like 7-8 years, half of them are dead. And it's another year before the next Avengers movie that we didn't even know was called Endgame, I think, at that time.
No, it was going to be Infinity War Part 2.
Exactly. Everyone was like, oh my God. Like, we have
It was a, suddenly it was a big there was a thing. Consequence. Yeah, yeah.
It was. It, and was, it was a big threat, like, really big thing. Cool. It was that, that was one of the peak of cinemas, I think. And when you went back in and watched Endgame and the journey of the rest of the characters had to save them, it was wild. Did you see it in cinema?
Which one?
Endgame.
Yeah, I think I saw it twice.
I did too as well. Did your cinema clap during the part with Captain America and Mjolnir?
I don't think so.
Okay, we saw it on opening night. And yeah, I don't think most people were super fans. Like, yeah, of course. Everyone was like a huge fan of Marvel being there. I remember the part where obviously, yeah, Thor's asking for Mjolnir back and then it goes and goes right past him. Mm-hmm. But then you see the hand and it's Captain America's hand. Everyone was like, oh my God, and clapping and stuff. It was a really good moment in the cinema. Like, it didn't feel cringy. It felt like, oh, that's cool. Awesome. Like, that's really cool to see. So that was one of the big things from, like, you don't get that in cinema as much these days.
Not really. So we're going to go back to Emma Stone.
We are. We got on a superhero tangent.
I missed one. And speaking of superheroes, I'm going to bring it back in. I watched this week, she doesn't have a big role, but it's an incredible performance. I watched Birdman.
Oh, yeah.
Did we miss that? The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
We didn't have that in there.
I forgot to type it in. Sorry.
I have seen it. Did you enjoy it?
I did. So yeah. I remember seeing, and the reason I wanted to watch this film, I'd seen a clip on some late night show of Emma Stone's monologue.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, this looks incredible. But for some reason.
Didn't get around.
No, I thought I had to watch something else first.
Oh, no, it's not.
I don't know. I think they'd been mentioning it, but I was like, I don't want to hear it and spoil it. So I sort of tuned out, but I thought I had to watch something else first and I never got around to it, even though I knew it was Iñárritu and he's like, you know, a very well-known filmmaker.
Yeah.
I just never got around to it. And then this week I was like, I have to watch it, obviously. And I loved her performance in it as his daughter. She's Michael Keaton's daughter and he's a stage actor and she's just come out of rehab and she's his assistant.
Yeah.
And she's just a bit jittery and
she is. She's got the same thing. She's got the black eyeliner on around her eyes and stuff.
Yeah,
and
it was a 2014 grungy look. Indie look.
Just such a good film though. A one-shot film.
One-shot film. And her performance in it was, I thought it was beautiful. Mm. It's very dramatic.
I love the ending.
Yeah.
With her just looking out the window.
Yeah.
Poetic.
Yeah, it was a really, really good.
Really good film. And I think
if you want to see her do like an early dramatic role that's grittier than most things she's done.
Check out Birdman.
This one, because I think sometimes when people play addicts, if they've not been or don't know anyone, it feels a bit cheap.
Yeah, they just like look like they're clowning around a little bit. Yeah.
But she does this one with heart.
Just subtle. Subtle acting towards it. Yeah. Really good. Another one I'll mention briefly, because I don't think you've seen it, is Gangster Squad.
No, I never caught this one.
Sean Penn, Ryan Gosling, and Emma Stone again.
They've done a few together.
They've done
more than I thought.
Yeah, I know. So this one had a lot of controversy around it.
I do remember hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah, you remember how this one got infinitely delayed?
Mm.
So this one was delayed during... So The Dark Knight came out a few years earlier, like 1 or 2 years earlier. I don't remember exactly. There was a mass shooting in America from one of the cinemas that was showing The Dark Knight. Someone walked in with a few guns, shot up a cinema, then left. This movie, Gangster Squad, same studio releasing it, had a very similar scene in it to what actually happened with that person. There was a scene in it where someone comes into a movie
theater
and shoots up a bunch of people.
Right, which isn't too out there if you are in America.
No. So what they had to do is they delayed this film, had to rework a bunch of scenes before and after where this event was supposed to happen, make it
look like it did.
Delete it out, make it go in and make the story work fine. So it was delayed like a year or two, I think, because of that reason.
Yeah.
So it was a huge big, like, oh, the Gangster Squad, this is the film they had to kind of change because of the events of what happened. And then it came out. It was very good. It was just a classic gangster movie. The good old 1940s gangster style. She plays like the done up pin,
yep.
Pin up doll kind of character that Ryan Gosling wants. It's fine. It's good. It's worth seeing. I wouldn't say it stands out for any real reason besides the kind of controversy that was behind it when it was getting made.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it was fine. Okay. Wouldn't say her performance in it was anything to stand out because she wasn't a main character. She didn't capture the screen. She was just there as more of a plot device than anything else.
Yeah, she's had an interesting run of films and now she's doing a lot more like award-winning films. Yeah. But over the years, she's done a lot of balance between like she started commercial or indie, then went sort of more commercial.
She's kind of done a roller coaster.
Did some like Academy performances, which I think is a cool thing as an actress. She's not pigeonholing herself. She's like, sometimes I'll do a role because it looks fun.
It's like a one for you, one for me situation.
Yeah, like, and I think that's good. I think sometimes actors, I don't know, they stop having fun with their job a little bit.
I mean, look at Harrison Ford.
And she's definitely kept having fun. She did a couple animated ones, and she did like The Croods, which I've not seen, but she voiced a few in there as well.
Yep.
Did you want to talk about like
Aloha?
Oh, I know about Aloha because I was on the internet this time and was she torn to shreds for this one?
Yeah, I'll bring up why. This one also was controversial. So not only is the movie an absolute giant mess, the story is just awful. The script running, awful. Emma Stone plays a fighter pilot of half Hawaiian, half Chinese descent, but looking like Emma Stone.
Yep.
And she was very much attacked online.
This was 2015.
Not so much like, so, I think her personally, because I think everyone realized like it wasn't really her fault, but the movie was attacked for whitewashing.
It did open up a big conversation.
Yeah, there was comments made during that year's Oscars about like the fact that there was, you know, whitewashing and stuff happening. It opened up an avenue for a conversation, Aloha. So if anything, it, you know, drove the narrative of actually getting the people to represent the actual heritage that they are on screen.
I do believe that there is a very, like there is a percentage of staff onus on the actors that are taking the role. At the end of the day, right, it's who the casting directors are putting out for this role.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from the studio and everything like that. Like it's less to do with, like if Emma Stone didn't take this role, they would have given it to some other white,
I think,
blonde.
Jennifer Lawrence was.
That's exactly it.
Supposed to take it, I think.
When they when they cast people, she could have been like, yeah, I'm not doing that because that's politically incorrect, which now I think actors are doing a lot more.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if the casting directors are putting out a brief for a particular look, they're going to cast that particular look, whether it goes to Emma Stone or not. And it brings a conversation of like responsibility.
Yeah.
And it goes beyond, I think, the actors. That being said,
the director kind of defended it being like, yeah, maybe it wasn't the best idea, but we wrote it as if like, yes, she is a descendant of these cultural backgrounds, but also not having the appearance of it. Like, apparently that was in the screenplay and everything. It just, she didn't have the appearance of it. I think Emma Stone kind of backed that point as well. She's like, yeah, maybe not my best choice in picking roles, but also it was written that way as well. Like it was written that way, but I'm like, it doesn't matter if it's written that way. You've said it on screen. Like it's literally said, she's like, I'm half Chinese. And you're like, oh my God. So that's the big point from Aloha. There is another thing I wanted to bring up about Aloha. It doesn't have anything to do with her, but I want everyone who's kind of got, don't watch this film. So I'm not telling you to sit down for 2 hours, but if you've got 5 minutes, YouTube the scene with Bradley Cooper and John Krasinski. They have a silent conversation to each other where they it goes into full subtitles, but all they're doing is looking at each other with like eyes and their eyes.
How have I never seen this? I was chronically online.
Oh my God, is it so bad? I was watching it and because there's an allusion to it earlier in the movie where they both meet each other. And it's very brief, but they look at each other, nothing said. And then Rachel McAdams is like, what the hell was that? And it's like, oh, he's actually a huge chatter. He said a lot with that. And then towards the end of the film, they actually have a full on silent conversation with subtitles, just looking at each other. It's so bad. So get a chance, Google that, YouTube it, and just laugh your head off. Anyway, Aloha is awful movie. which is disappointing because I watched it because I'm like, oh, Hawaii. Surely I'm going to love this film. Surely.
Shannon's okay with some whitewashing because it's Hawaii.
I'm okay with whitewashing. No, that's why before I even knew about it.
No, I know.
I chucked it on. I was like, yeah, great. Like, I love the setting. It should be fine. I'm pretty over Bradley Cooper, but I can, you know, he's bearable, but it was really bad. Didn't even show off the good parts of Hawaii. Moving on. Another one.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen this film yet, but I have. Battle of the Sexes, 2017.
No, I did watch this one.
Didn't you? You did say that. My bad. What did you think about it?
Not a bad film. Not the best film. I think it's a solid film. That being said, like, it's not an Academy winning.
No, but I feel like it wanted to be.
Yeah, I tried to watch this on the plane over to LA. Yeah, I think I watched the opening and went, this is not a plane film.
This is not a plane. It's definitely not a plane film.
I've then gone to make worse decisions on that flyover, but that's, you know, you win some, you lose most.
It's all hindsight, 2020.
I actually didn't mind this film. I thought her performance as
Billie Jean King
was, I liked it. I think
she was great. Job.
I think the story that they were telling was quite nice. I think the way that they did it was quite nice.
I just felt like there's something was missing at the same time.
It wasn't as big, I think, as it was trying to be. And I think that's the problem. I think it was trying to tell two stories at once, and I think that's the problem because it was partially the story of her doing this tennis comp and wanting to beat – well, she wasn't getting paid the same amount as men, so she wanted to make a example of that.
Yeah. So she.
So it was part that story of her trying to beat Steve Carell's character, but also while they were telling the story, they were telling sort of her personal story.
Yeah.
And she falls in love or she has like a romance with the hairdresser that they then brought on tour. And that was kind of, I think that had the better story because it was personal, what was personally.
Something you could connect with.
Her big conflict was that as opposed to winning actual, this tennis competition.
It went by the wayside.
Which it was like, that's what it was set. I don't know. It had two different inner and sort of outer conflicts, I suppose. But I think they didn't quite, I think they should have focused on one more than the other rather than trying to balance the two. Yeah.
I agree with entirely all your points then. I don't think it was a terrible film. I just think it's forgettable.
I'm surprised I didn't know more about it, to be honest.
Yeah. And you're not a huge tennis fan.
No. Also, it's awkward because they have the character of Margaret Court. And she's like, and I'm, we're Australian. And now there's been more controversy since the film came out about Margaret Court.
Margaret Court.
And I'm like, I know you're supposed to be like the villain, but like, oh man, you're an even bigger villain in real life now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I didn't even want to see her on screen. I was like, ew, Margaret Court. Ew, she was real. Like,
she's a real person.
God, she was around forever.
She's still around. Yeah. Oh my God. Good
Lord. That was a little tangent. Yeah. The next big one that she did, Shannon's not seen yet.
I have not seen this one.
This is The Favourite. This is a Yorgos Lanthimos, which I've definitely mispronounced, but I'm going to say it.
I think you nailed it.
Dodgy way. Oh, I think, I don't know if it's technically correct, but it's the white way of, anyway.
It's fine.
Whatever.
Same director as Poor Things.
So. Written or co-written again by Tony McNamara, who's an Australian dude, which good on him. What a legend.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then they obviously went on to do Poor Things. This one was based on a book, I believe. It's starring Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz, and Nicholas Holt. And it's in the early 18th century England, the status quo at a court is upset when a new servant arrives and endears herself to a frail Queen Anne. This movie was wild. I was into it until the last like 3 seconds. I think I mentioned it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, you did. And I was like, what do you mean by that? I need to watch it to find out why.
The end scene just is weird. Okay. But yeah, this one is mostly sort of like it's set in like 18th century England, so it's like all like, you know, well-to-do types. But then it's like secretly underground also like a real sexy. Like they've all got like sexual desire a lot. So it goes into
of the 18th century.
Yeah. So it's just this bizarre thing. There's a lot of like outlandish honesty coming from Olivia Colman, who's losing her mind. And she's just like, oh, I like when blah does blah, 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 which I'm not like, going to get into because it's fun to watch.
It's crass.
But yeah, no, Emma Stone was great in this. I think it was her first like English speaking, like trying to do an accent. And she did a pretty good job. I'm not going to lie. But she, yeah,
well, when
this watch one I want to rewatch.
Like, yeah, she nailed it
again. Like, I desperately want to rewatch this.
I want to watch it too. Yes, yeah. I like Yorgos. His stuff's good.
His stuff I haven't watched a lot. I need to go back and
watch the other stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's a favorite. Next one's Double Tap. So Zombieland Double Tap, which is the sequel. It came out 10 years later.
I don't think you've watched it.
I think it was fine. I think the heyday of zombie genre has gone.
Definitely.
So no one really kind of got on board again 10 years later. It was entirely fine. It was mostly the same type of humor as the first one. Didn't really progress the characters' arcs much further than the first one did, besides look after family. Yeah, it was another run of the mill. If you've seen the first one, you've
seen the second one?
Yeah, well, if you enjoyed the first one, you'll probably enjoy it. It's not like offensive or anything to the franchise. It's fine. Not much real else to say. They all pretty much play the same characters in this. Yeah, same performances as the first one. So we'll see if we get a third tap on 2029, because every 10 years. Yeah. Apparently Emma Stone was like, we should do this every 10 years. Maybe not.
The next big one she did was Cruella in 2021.
That was the COVID film.
Yeah. Did you see this?
I did. It was on streaming. I went to cinemas for it. Did you? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was cinemas.
It was me and a lot of children.
I can imagine.
Which is wild because it's not a kid's film. No, it isn't.
Now
I've watched
it. Now you mentioned it. I'm like, it's not a kid's film at all. Like, it plays sort of in the same vein as it's
kid's
in the same
Devil
world.
Wears Prada.
Yeah.
A little bit more fairy tale.
I think
because
everyone's like, oh, it's the bad person from 101 Dalmatians. Well, it is, but it's a different take on it. It's a prequel origin story of Cruella de Vil, but it's completely not about that.
Mm.
It's a fashion revenge story.
Yeah. And that's how she becomes like, that's why I want a coat made of puppies. And you're like, what?
Yeah, well, even then, it's not believable that she goes from this movie to that.
No, it's weird.
Yeah, because, I mean, from every right, this revenge story makes sense as to why she is doing the stuff she's doing. Like, she's been wronged up until that point. So she's getting back at the people that wronged her, right? That's the whole point of this film. And lo and behold, at the end of the film, she's got the mansion on the hill and she's Cruella.
This is another Tony McNamara film.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him.
Yeah, he's...
I liked her in this. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah,
it was
I agree.
Fun.
That thing where she does that dress reveal when she spins and it burns. That was pretty cool.
Because she gets the comedy drama.
Exactly.
She got
right.
the tone of this film spot on. Yeah. And I think that's what made it. Someone else maybe wouldn't have achieved it the way she did.
No. They are doing a sequel.
Yeah, they are.
I feel like they need to. If they're going to bridge that gap between what she's like at the end of this one to puppy coat in 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, she's an icon, but I can't get past the puppy coat. Sorry.
No, it's very
Cruella,
weird.
I like puppies more than I like you.
It took me so long to realize that, you know how she's got those two guy friends in it?
Yeah.
That they were the henchmen in the 101 Dalmatians?
Yeah.
I didn't realize. I looked it up later. I'm like, oh, that makes sense why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And then why they look like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Idiot. It was good. It's a good film. I wouldn't say, it's not award winning. It's just one of those films you're like, this is all right. This is a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one, the big one.
The big last one.
Which we've
one.
Talked a lot about, so maybe we'll keep it brief, is Poor Things. And I think she's worked her way up to this point in her career, definitely. Like, she's done the work as an actress to be able to do such a stellar Oscar-worthy performance in this. Her physical acting in this, as well as everything else, was just on point.
Yeah. I can't believe Tony McNamara again.
Yeah, he went from writing a lot of Aussie TV
to doing nearly every single Emma Stone
got into this
project.
And he's just, I mean, I'm so impressed with the guy.
That is awesome.
Like a career goals type.
100%. Yeah. 100%. That's crazy. Yeah, we've spoken about this film a couple of times. It's now on streaming with Disney Plus. I don't really know if I need to speak any more about it besides the fact you need to see it.
Yeah, if you're into films, watch this one. It is absolutely gorgeous, and
you're in for a journey.
She's incredible in it.
Yeah.
She really is.
She deserved the Oscar win. Not saying that Lily Gladstone didn't, because I thought her portrayal in Killers of the Flower Moon was phenomenal in that as well. But if there had to be a winner, Emma Stone.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, sometimes...
It's between the two of them.
It's one of those things. Sometimes they're both equally deserving. Mm. It's not like she didn't win and you go, She didn't deserve it. It's like, no, no, she, no.
Emma Stone deserved it. It just sucks. It was the same year.
Is yeah, she's like just does a beautiful performance. And we've briefly said it, and I'll sort of quickly say it again. It's the fact that she, this story is a journey of a character growing up, essentially. And the way she is able to do the performances,
yep,
so you believe every beat that she is, you know, another day,
older,
year, 10 yep, years older, when they shoot out of chronological order.
It's incredible.
Is impressive.
Yeah, hands down.
It's, yep, she does, it's so grounded too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she made this film.
It's rewatchable too. I really want to see it again.
I can't wait to rewatch this one.
Yeah.
I just think maybe one of my top films of, it was last year, but I watched it beginning
you
of this year.
You watched it this year, yeah.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it for Emma Stone. She's got a bunch of things coming out. There's another Yorgos film, which I haven't seen the trailer of just yet. Very excited to just keep watching her stuff. I want to see her in a comedy again.
Yeah, I think she's due for another comedy again.
Because she's been doing a lot of more dramatic or like stylized films with Cruella and that. I can't wait just to keep watching her. I think sometimes it's nice having an actor of your generation, like that you get to watch from their first stuff until
get
to be like, you know, in their 80s or whatever.
It'll be interesting because we'll be around the same age.
I'm excited to have that with her as an actress because I think she's always been incredible.
And she'll always be used. Like she won't, be, you know, stop being cast.
No, because she's
good,
got,
she's good enough and she's got range.
Charisma, yeah, as well.
Yeah, charisma, range. She's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so.
All right.
And that is it for this week. As always, thank you so much for listening. We're really keen to do it. Write in your feedback because we'll start adapting the new ones we're doing because we're, again, so far in advance. But you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at BingeLists and also TikTok.
Yes.
At BingeLists. We're doing a lot of video reviews. Yep. We're very much on top of it this year. We're going to start posting like what we're watching throughout the week to get you involved. Yep. We really want to get involved. We want you guys to get involved. And if you're from other countries, shout out. Tell us how you found us.
Yeah. We'll shout you out.
We'd love to have a chat. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want us to do a particular episode as well, get in touch. And if you're old school, you can email us at bingelistandboxofficehits@gmail.com. Thank you so much for another week. And we hope you like Emma Stone's films.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.